Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and we are on the 16th of May, 2011, and this is the Q&A call for the website. So, welcome. Our first question. Who needs to know? Tony's message today deals with the impact of his affair had on people other than his wife, friends that looked up to him and were hurt that he had an affair. I have some extremely close friends who don't even know about my affair, and in many ways, I desire to talk to them about it so they can know what I did. I can ask forgiveness from them and move forward in an authentic relationship with them. Complicating this, however, is the fact that I share these close mutual friends, church friends, with my affair partner and his wife, and they've made it clear they would rather not anyone know about the affair. If I confess to my friends, they'll probably put two and two together and know or at least have a good guess about who my affair was with, thus letting out what they would rather remain hidden. I don't really know what to do. Who really needs to know about my affair, in your opinion? And if I do want to talk to my close friends about it, is there anything I need to give up in order to comply with the wishes of the woman whose husband I had an affair with? Well, so in many ways, you want to have an ongoing authentic relationship with the other people. You know, at the same time, my question would be if you're letting them know about the affair, what is it that you've done? How have you, quote, offended them, or what have you done to them? So I would say if you had done something specifically to them, then there may be a little different need for talking with them. I do understand the frustration, though, of how this thing has gone and, you know, just the inability to be real with your friends about all of this. You know, I guess for me, I would say I would certainly pray about it. I would try to honor, if you can, the request of the other person. And I think there will probably come a day when you can tell the story with them. At the very least, you can let them know that you're going through a really difficult time and you appreciate their prayers and their support. But just tell them straight up, it's not anything I can really talk about. But I would appreciate your prayers. And then go on and be, as from this day forward, as open and authentic with them as you possibly can. It is difficult when you would love to be able to talk with them. I would certainly try to get other friends that you can't talk with, because being alone through this would be awful. So do find others who you can share with. I think you'll find that to be very, very helpful. Next, I'm the betrayed spouse, and although I'm working on forgiveness, I'm ambivalent on whether I should stay or should go. I wouldn't want to stay in a marriage if I will always feel like this. What's a reasonable length of time I can give myself to make that decision? You know, one of the things that Leslie says that I think is really wise is that it's not a matter of how much time, it's how you spend the time. And you know, one of the things I would suggest, you know, if you're doing Harboring Hope or anything like that, is that you maintain the necessary focus to make sure you're using the time well and how you're dealing with the intrusive thoughts, what you're focused on, and your own healing. In terms of a length of time to answer that particular question, we always say wait at least 18 to 24 months. You're really not going to know how you feel until a little bit farther down the line. The other thing is, if you continue to have resentments toward your mate, and I think it's, you know, the whole grieving process has a lot to do with our letting go. We can choose to forgive, but moving through that pain just flat takes time, and you won't know where you're at until you're at that place. But if you still have resentments, you're going to find the desire to be in the relationship to be negligible at best. In the long run, it's going to be about your ability to heal and your mate's ability to take responsibility for where they've been and what they need to be doing. If they are doing the work they need to do and you can see their progress, I do believe if you forgive and let go of your resentments that those feelings will come back. But that's something that happens over time, which is why we always put that timeline at about 18 to 24 months. Next. We've attended EMS, and I'm the hurt spouse. After confronting him for the third time in a lie, having reconnected with one of his APs, I thought he'd ended it again. This happened before EMS. Just recently, I caught him in another lie about the last time he had contact with her. He did reconnect with her again, but says only once, and he hasn't had contact since. Why would he continue to lie after EMS? He tells me that he's been good since EMS. I don't believe him. Last year, he was in an affair with her while telling me he wasn't. Three times, he broke it off with her and couldn't walk away. He wants to stop, but can't. Should he be selective in information he shares with me? He thought because it happened prior to EMS that he didn't think it was important to tell me. So every time I ask, he lied. How can we have intimacy if lies are present? How can we have a marriage if lies are present? I think that is an excellent question. And my encouragement to him, if he wants to develop trust, is he begins by trusting you with information. And it's controlling and it's fear-based when you try to control your mate through the flow of information. And it is frightening for him, for you to actually know what all he's done, but it's manipulative in nature. And I would hope that he can kind of grow to the place where he's mature enough and whole enough that he's going to be able to not hold those lies and just give you straight-up answers that you would want. And I believe that ultimately you need. So you're going to have a lot of trouble having intimacy if he's not able to be truthful. Hopefully that was the last of it. And one of the things we say, you know, intimacy is the keeping of secrets. So any place that we hold a lie, so to speak, or we're keeping information away, he's robbing himself of the opportunity to really be loved. As scary as it is, it's hard to face who you are and what you've done. And I just pray that he'll come to the place where he can be honest and transparent and face this whole thing. Recovery from sex addiction. My husband has been in recovery from sexual addiction for 11 months and has been doing everything he can to recover. We learned at EMS and through Harboring Hope that his emotional development was stalled at the age he began using sex as a coping mechanism, which would be about 12. But it's been almost a year since he began recovery, and he's still unwilling to really empathize. He knows intellectually that he did very bad things, and he's ashamed and feels a lot of guilt, but he cannot or will not put himself in my shoes so he can grasp the devastation this has caused me and our family. He can talk objectively about it, but he doesn't react appropriately when faced with someone else's pain, anger, etc. He shuts down and just doesn't think about it. He admits that he rarely thinks about how I feel because of his affair and cannot or will not imagine it or go there. My questions. 1. Is this normal for a recovering sex addict to still feel little empathy even though it has been 11 months? So let me answer the first question. And it is not abnormal. So it often takes, you know, a number of years for someone to begin to develop something like empathy as long as they continue to pursue and they're in groups. I mean, I do believe it starts with doing the group work. He needs to be with, and hopefully in his recovery, he's doing this, where he is with other people and he can witness them display empathy, where he has to learn to be empathetic there. In some ways, you'll find you may be the last person because of his own defense mechanisms he's able to do this with. But at 11 months, I think, you know, if depending on how long he's been acting out and how old he is, we kind of determine how long it's going to take for that to begin to kick in. Hopefully, in his program that he's working, though, he is moving toward that. If he's not, I'd recommend that he be in some sort of individual therapy to even help with that, making that a specific goal of the recovery, just learning to be empathetic. And I was thinking of one person I know of. It took him about 4 years before he was finally able to begin to put himself, maybe as long as five, put himself in that place where his mate was. And part of that was, at least in this case I'm thinking of, where it took so long, he had so much anger that he wasn't even able to put his finger on where the anger came from. And so there was a lot of kind of letting go of past hurts, not just from his wife, but from other things that were necessary before he could kind of get out of himself enough to care about others, too. And by the way, another thing on empathy, we're starting the Hope for Life course, and if in that course we have a huge section on empathy, I don't know if it'll help any or not, but it certainly begins to hammer, I think, going down, trying to strip away some of the defense mechanisms around empathy and why we're unable to feel for others. And so if that's something he might be interested in, he could call or write Aaron at aaron@hope-now.com. This particular course isn't listed on the website yet, I don't believe. So he would just need to contact Aaron as administrator and ask about the new Unfaithful Spouse course, and maybe that would be helpful. Number two, if it is normal, when should he start to be able to feel the pain that he caused? I think I just answered that. You know, it would be difficult to tell, but he's going to have to do the individual work necessary to begin to make that happen, because it may take a while. Three, if it is normal, is it due to the stalled emotional development of a sex addict? Potentially, in answer to number three, there actually, depending on how much he was acting out, there can literally be problems with the whole prefrontal cortex and how it connects with people, and some very interesting attachment literature on that. So, but it's not just about the stalled emotional development. It's about a physiological development issue that happened probably because of people not connecting with him, and as a child kind of not getting what he needed, as at least some of the theories kind of would talk about, you know, that, and that was not modeled for him potentially. So at that point, it's really a new behavior that they're having to learn. And the other thing, as I mentioned before, is the other thing that can block it is not being able to, deep shame can block empathy, the fear of being known, because of, and that's a core problem for sex addicts. That's why it takes a long time to work through this. And also resentments, places where they've been unable to forgive. But you can't necessarily point the finger, I think, at any one of those. I think that would be an issue of individual therapy where he has to kind of explore what's the block for him. Hopefully that'll help you a little bit. So next question. I am frustrated by a daily dilemma related to rebuilding the relationship. And I'm just a second here. Start over. Rick, I'm very frustrated by a daily dilemma related to rebuilding the relationship with my spouse. My spouse has been very disconnected, unaffectionate, and cold following an affair that rocked our marriage. So the situation is that one of us very much desires closeness and affection at this stage of the process, and the other does not. Compounding the situation is that many of the couples who attended EMS weekend, you gave us a 90-day no affection exercise to follow. While it was clear that the exercise was intended to take the pressure off of the spouse that was not open to displays of affection at the moment, the net effect has been a complete shutdown of any displays of affection whatsoever as it is no longer possible to so much as give my spouse a hug when it's clear that my spouse really needs a hug, for example. So the dilemma is this. If I make an effort to show affection to my spouse, it pushes my spouse away. If I do nothing, how will NFC ever be reestablished so that our relationship can begin to heal and rebuild? If our heart follows our actions and we purposely choose to be cold and distant to our spouse, wouldn't this also mean we're purposely leading our heart away from our spouse? Okay, so the first assumption is if our heart follows our actions. That's not always the case, that our heart follows our actions. There's a theory that you can act yourself into a better way of feeling. Not necessarily true. There's also a thing called RED, where sometimes it's about a requirement, an expectation, and a feeling of demand. And I don't know exactly who has written this. Because usually when I talk about no affection, what I'm really talking about is no physical intimacy, hugs and everything like that. I usually still encourage, so don't remember a case when I said absolutely no touch. But that being the case, assuming I did. The problem is if it feels like a sense of demand to either party, then usually what's happened is they've already tried to do things out of duty or obligation because they're supposed to. And that it's we never fall over the what, we fall over the why. So if someone's trying to do the right thing for the wrong reason and trying to be good, if it's a kind of a requirement-based and an expectation, it'll always feel like a demand, and in the long run, you're going to end up being kind of the bad person because they'll feel like you're putting pressure on them all the time to respond. What I would want is for your mate to learn how to enjoy you, for your mate to learn how to appreciate you, and for them to come towards you with a desire of their heart, not just they're doing the right thing. But it's extremely difficult, I think, for the person in your place, because you have to, you know, the two of you, you have to begin to know that your mate really does ultimately want to come towards you and that they're working a program, not that they're just trying to push you away or they're using this as an excuse to pull away from you. Hopefully the two of you are in some type of therapy or treatment. I think that's going to be really important for you. And like I said, our heart doesn't necessarily follow actions. So I would also hope by giving space, what you would ultimately be able to do, though, and this was the goal of the exercise, is that it would allow their heart to move towards you some. I mean, that's really what you want, is almost like that absence causes the heart to grow fonder, but something will be coming up in them. And I'd be interested in knowing more about this one and how long this has been going on and when you attended EMS and where things are at, because I could probably, if I knew more about timeline, could give a little more thorough answer on this one. But I'll be interested in, maybe you can write. I would love to get a little more feedback on this one. Next, need to talk. How do you get your spouse to open up and talk when they don't ever want to talk? This appears to be critical in our situation because I don't see how our relationship will ever rebuild if only one of us is willing to talk about anything more than significant than the weather. How do I draw my spouse out of the proverbial shell in a way that will help us to move forward and repair the connection between us? When my spouse, for whatever reason, is not willing to be able to open up and participate. Some specific examples and exercises would be helpful. I think that this is where individual therapy or couples therapy, not individual, is very, very helpful. If you've ever attended EMS, the exercises after EMS and the beyond EMS are the exercises in after the 911 marriage, even 911 marriage itself, are really intended to get the two of you to begin to talk. What we believe is that you've got to be able to have a rational conversation versus an emotional conversation about what has occurred. And it's very difficult to, I think, make that happen over time for most couples. That's where the groups are really helpful in having that occur. You know, it's one of my questions would be, why doesn't your mate want to talk? Is it because they've never talked before in the past? Is this kind of a new condition for them? Is this an old condition for them? Because if they've never talked, that's one thing. If they've just stopped talking after the affair, then my concern would be almost not knowing how to regulate the emotions that are generated as a result of the infidelity. And that, to me, would be, I guess, something I'd want to know here. But to move forward, you're going to have to be able to talk about it. In fact, research is very specific. 84% of couples who can really talk about it and process what occurred and, you know, discuss it and not get defensive, but just have that rational conversation, they make it fine. But there's only about 54% of couples that survive if they're not able to really talk about it. And learning how to process it is incredibly important. So get help, please. Some specific examples and exercises. You know, in one of the things that you can do is read books on marriage out loud to each other. Or it doesn't even have to be books on marriage, but that's one particular thing that Stephanie and I have spent a lot of time doing. Where it gives us something ultimately to talk about. Reading books, devotional books, if you're spiritually minded, and can often give kind of a pathway if you're reading out loud to each other for things to talk about. Things like marriage encounter or just kind of marriage enrichment programs. The marriage encounter weekends through the Catholic Diocese are really good because it gives you a way of journaling and communicating with each other. Family dynamics, if you look at familydynamics.com or org, I think that's it, has a great some great stuff on just helping couples learn how to talk with each other. Reading books such as His Needs, Her Needs out loud to each other can be really good. I mean, I just think that it's something the two of you have to commit to work on to begin to make it happen. And hopefully your mate would be willing to do that. One of the things I don't know in this situation is who was the hurt spouse and who was the unfaithful spouse, because that would be interesting to me. I mean, if it's the hurt spouse that's unwilling to talk, then my concern would be that, you know, the pain is so great, it's difficult. They don't know how to talk about it. So there may be some trauma involved that they would need to address individually. If the unfaithful spouse that's unwilling to talk, my concern would be the shame associated with it or the fear of kind of what the other person's reaction would be. If those are the cases, then talking with maybe finding things to talk about that are non-related, such as marriage enrichment things, may just be a first step. But you're going to be better off first addressing the issues around the infidelity. So anything, maybe reading After an Affair by Janice Abraham Springs out loud to each other would be another way that you could find topics just to begin to talk. But it won't happen if you don't create the time to make that happen. It really almost has to be intentional. At this point, from what I am reading here, you just need some help on how to get the relationship beyond or to something significant. And even writing letters to each other is a great way to go. Or one final exercise. I'm sorry, I'm just throwing things out here that I've done. Set a timer, and each of you talk, set it for 5 minutes, and do this every day. I mean, it's a real simple exercise, or every other day, or once a week, whatever. But no less than once a week. And so one person has to talk for 5 minutes, the other person has to listen, and can give no reply. All they have to do is sit there and listen to everything the other person has to say for 5 minutes. Then reset the timer, and the other party then gets to talk for 5 minutes about themselves, not about their mate. Both of you can't talk about their mate. You can only talk about yourself and kind of what you're feeling and you know, what you've discovered and what you're going through, kind of what life's like for you. The other person then talks for 5 minutes with no response, and then you go on. Just the opportunity to talk out loud to each other for 5 minutes oftentimes is a great way for couples to begin to connect and move forward in some very, very different ways. So I believe that's the last of our questions for today. Certainly appreciate everybody being on the call. And I hope you guys have a good week, and I look forward to talking with you next Monday. Be healing.